Hey, welcome to The Living Stone, a podcast from Greystone Baptist Church in Raleigh, North Carolina. This Sunday, we will welcome Dr. Andy Young as our guest proclaimer. Andy joined the CBFNC staff in January of 2019 as the Associate Executive Coordinator. His primary responsibility is to support the mission of CBFNC and its ministries and to assist the coordinators in ministering alongside their partner churches. Sermons, our conversations, and this podcast are designed to make us think and reflect and ask questions. We want to hear from you. Do you have questions about the Bible, spirituality, or about the church? Did a recent sermon spark curiosity for you around a particular issue? Let's keep the conversation going. Send us questions you'd like to ask Pastor Chrissy directly or topics you'd like to hear more about on this podcast. You can email us at podcast@greystonechurch.org. This Sunday, on the sixth Sunday after the Epiphany, Pastor Chrissy's sermon was titled, You Have Heard It Said, and our scripture reading was from Matthew chapter 5, verses 21 through 32. You have heard that it was said to those of ancient times, You shall not murder, and whoever murders shall be liable to judgment. But I say to you that if you are angry with your brother or sister, you will be liable to judgment. And if you insult a brother or sister, you will be liable to the council. And if you say, you fool, you will be liable to the hell of fire. So when you are offering your gifts at the altar, if you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother or sister, and then come and offer your gift. Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you are on the way to court with him, or your accuser may hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the guard, and you will be thrown into prison. Truly I tell you, you will never get out until you have paid the last penny. You have heard it said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to go into hell. It was also said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that anyone who divorces his wife, except on the ground of unchastity, causes her to commit adultery, and whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery.
On Yom Kippur, a rabbi stood before his congregation. And he began a sermon on forgiveness by asking the people in the pews, how many of you have forgiven your enemies? About half of them raised their hands. And then he rephrased the question, asking again, how many of you want to forgive your enemies? Well, the second time, nearly every hand in the congregation went up, every one of them except for the hand of little old Sadie Horowitz. Mrs. Horowitz, said the rabbi, are you not willing to forgive your enemies? Even on this day of atonement, when we recognize that God has forgiven us, even now are you not willing to forgive? Well, I don't have any enemies, Miss Horowitz replied. Mrs. Horowitz, that is most impressive. How old are you? The rabbi spoke from the pulpit. 98, she said back. Oh, Miss Horowitz, you are such a blessing and such a lesson to us. Would you please stand up in front of this congregation and tell us all how you have lived to be 98 years old and not have a single enemy in all the world? Little Miss Horowitz got up slowly and smiled and faced the congregation and said, well, I outlived every single one. Today's reading from Matthew's gospel can be a little bit difficult, so I thought it might be best to start with a laugh. You know, we laugh because we know it's true. Forgiveness is one of the most difficult pieces of our personal lives, of our public lives, and even of our spiritual lives. We laugh, but I bet many of us might only hope to outlive our enemies so that we could one day stand up and say with integrity, I don't have any enemies. There's a good reason that Mrs. Horowitz was the only person standing when the rabbi began his sermon that day. Today's difficult reading from the Gospel of Matthew is from Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. And many of us know that famous sermon for its beginnings with the Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor, blessed are the hungry, blessed are the meek. But according to Matthew, that's only the beginning of a very powerful sermon that goes on for three whole chapters and includes so much more than just the beautiful poetic words of blessing. It also includes a more provocative moral teaching about how Christian disciples are supposed to live. And these teachings that we read, we discover that they are deeply rooted in Torah, in the law of Moses and of the Hebrew people. Now, some may say that Jesus came to give us a new law, to abolish the old law that was given to Moses on Mount Sinai, and to start something new altogether. They say that Jesus came to start a tradition of grace and love as opposed to that old one of anger and vengeance. And sometimes when we get to thinking this way, we let ourselves off the hook a little bit, perhaps a little too much. We let ourselves forget about some of those old ideas that we find in what we call our Old Testament, the things we don't really want to include in our moral code. You know, the things like that shrimp dinner we ate last night, or maybe the bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit we grabbed on the way to church this morning. The thought that Jesus came to abolish that old law and create something new altogether, well, sometimes it makes us feel quite comfortable. Those are the old rules. Jesus came to give us something new. But you may remember that in the reading from last week, which was also found in Matthew's fifth chapter, Jesus says, "Do not think that I came to abolish the law. I came to fulfill it." So in today's reading, we begin to hear Jesus flesh that out a little bit, to explain a little bit more what he's talking about. "You have heard it said, 'You shall not murder, and whoever murders will be liable to judgment.' You've heard it said, 'You shall not commit adultery.' You've heard it said that whoever divorces his wife, let him also give her a certificate of divorce." And the implied is, lest she be accused of adultery. With brilliant rhythm and repetitive style that delights any preacher, Jesus upholds and supports Torah law and reminds the people that what they already know. You're not supposed to kill, you're not supposed to cheat, and you're not supposed to divorce your wife. Now, of course, the divorce part was specifically aimed at the men in the room because in Jesus' day, women could not file for divorce. They had no power. In fact, in the ancient laws, divorce could only legally happen in a few specific instances. But even when that legal bond was severed, there were still questions in the communities and in the faith families as to whether or not the spiritual commitment had been released. Also, in Jesus' world, when divorce happened, it was most often the women who suffered the most. They bore the brunt of the shame and the suspicion, and the economic burden that they faced was nearly impossible to overcome. To be a divorced woman in Jesus' world was often worse than, and sometimes included, a death sentence. So here, Jesus is not only taking issue with the legalities of divorce, but he is calling out the ways that men were treating women. Now, these words you need to hear were never intended to be used as a means to inflict shame or guilt. So when you hear them, if it triggers something inside you, please do not send yourself down that path. Don't let yourself go down that path of shame, and don't let anybody else send you down that path. You've heard it said. Jesus starts with the law. Jesus begins with the law because he did not come to abolish it. He came to fulfill it. He came to transcend it, to bring new life, to reinterpret it, to show us with his whole life what Torah looks like in action, incarnate, in human skin. So each time he quotes from the Torah law, he isn't saying, "Don't worry about that part, that's an old part." He's saying, "Yes, but pay attention because there's so much more. Torah forbids murder, but Jesus says that we're also accountable to the things that are the seedbed for murder, things like prejudice and hatred and anger. Torah forbids adultery, but Jesus says we're also accountable for lust and for objectifying one another. Torah forbids divorce, yes, but Jesus says what is more important is that we take care of those whose lives are woven together with our own. And as Jesus does this, he expands the law with his interpretation. And most of us, as Jesus is expanding the law, might begin to feel a little uneasy, because while we may not be murderers, we can certainly identify with those thoughts and feelings of hatred and anger and lust. We are probably all guilty of hurling an insult or two. We are probably all guilty of participating in or using dehumanizing rhetoric. As Jesus expands the law, his new categories begin to reframe the whole conversation. What was once us and them, they are guilty, we are not, now becomes us and, well, us. As Jesus expands the law, we begin to recognize that we can no longer be about pointing our fingers at somebody else, demanding that they fix their lives, because now we too are part of the problem. We too are in need of forgiveness, and we are in need of reconciliation with God and also with one another. American writer and spiritual leader Richard Rohr does a lot of work around this concept of reconciliation. And in one of his daily meditations that he sends out to thousands and thousands of people, he talks about a moment with his mother as she was nearing the end of her life. She'd been lingering on the threshold between life and death for days, and she seemed prepared. She seemed ready to die, ready to let go. But each day, as the family gathered around, she talked about a mesh. She said there was a mesh that she couldn't seem to get through, and all of her children, although they were now grown, they had gathered back around her. They were telling stories. They were telling her about how much they would miss her, trying to give her permission to move on through that mesh. Well, Richard's father, her husband, joined in echoing their words, telling stories and saying that he would truly miss her. And upon hearing this, she piped up and said, "Well, I don't believe that." Well, Richard and his brothers and sisters were shocked at these harsh words coming from their mother as she lay on her deathbed. And then his father began to speak, saying, "I ask your forgiveness for all the times that I've hurt you in our 54 years of marriage. I want you to forgive me, and I forgive you of all the times that I've hurt you." Richard quite pastorally leaned in and said, "Mother, isn't that beautiful? Now say it back." His mother clammed up. She didn't want to say it. "Mother, you're soon going to be before God," Richard urged her. "You don't want to come before God, but without forgiving everybody." She said, "Oh, I forgive everybody." "But do you forgive Daddy?" he asked. She continued to resist, but after a little more prodding from the family, she finally spoke up and said, "Richard, I forgive you." "Well, Mom, say the other half." His mother started breathing heavily and rapidly before she summoned the energy required to say, "Rich, I ask your forgiveness." After a few moments of labored breathing, his mother spoke once more and said, "That's it. That's it. That's what I needed to do. It's gone. That mesh that I had been stuck in for days, it's now gone." I wonder how many of us, although we're not lying in our deathbed surrounded by family, I wonder how many of us are trapped in that same mesh, that indescribable, invisible mesh that keeps us stuck in our past and unable to move on, fully living into God's dreams for our lives. I wonder how many of us have held a grudge, have perpetuated an argument, have dug in our heels, refusing to admit that we were wrong, just because we're too proud to confess, too proud to ask for forgiveness. Maybe we've asked God for forgiveness. Maybe we've confessed in our own private space, in our own devotional lives, but have we truly reconciled with one another? How many of us feel stuck, either in our marriages or in a close relationship, perhaps because we haven't been able to own our shortcomings, or because we haven't been able to truly give one another forgiveness? Are we trapped in that mesh? We all need to forgive, and we all need to be forgiven. Well, it's easy to read these verses and to interpret them for our own individual lives. For some time now, you and I have grown accustomed to reading the text that way. We have placed ourselves within the framework of sins that we have personally committed. Some of us have gotten pretty good at asking for forgiveness, of speaking our confessions to one another, seeking reconciliation. And that's a good thing. We should celebrate that. But that's not the whole thing. That's not all of it. In Matthew's gospel, Jesus' Sermon on the Mount echoes the words of the Hebrew prophets, which call the people to reconcile themselves to one another as a critical part of their spiritual practice. Yes, there is a micro interpretation of Jesus' words, a personal application and exhortation to be peacemakers in our own lives, to give and receive forgiveness with those whom we love. But that is not all. Within these words, there's also a global implication. There is a macro interpretation that calls us not only to rid ourselves of our sins, to confess to one another, but it calls us to rid our whole world of things like murder and anger and insult and broken relationship, of objectification, of dehumanization. The text calls us to do that because we are called to be communities of reconciliation, nations of peacemakers, one global movement modeling God's forgiveness. And as we use the Bible to interpret and to shape not only our personal lives, I wonder if we might begin to use it to shape our public lives. I wonder where we might be called to reconcile with our sisters and brothers before we come to worship our God. I wonder where we might begin to say, I'm sorry, we all together, we were wrong. We were trapped in this mesh and we couldn't see through it. I wonder how we might need to confess we misunderstood, we took advantage, or maybe even we acted poorly together. We acted selfishly and you paid the price. We were trapped in that mesh. I wonder how we might begin to repair the brokenness that exists in our world because of our shared sins. Things like racism and classism, sexism and extreme nationalism. God help us, because we are all caught up in that mesh. We're caught up in the mesh and we can't see through it. We're unable to forgive. We're unable to confess. We are unable to be reconciled with one another because we are trapped in cycles of pain and lies and grief and brokenness. But perhaps that's not the end. Perhaps the answers are yet to be discovered, but maybe they include climbing out of the mesh, beginning with holy humility. Humility that recognizes the sins of our past and our present. Perhaps getting out of that mesh begins with a spirit of confession that seeks reconciliation and truth with all people, all nations, and eventually even all of creation. Because if we listen to the words of Jesus as he interprets the law and as he calls his people to a higher standard of living, perhaps we too might begin to hear and to interpret the world for our day. We have heard it said, you shall not kill. But Jesus is saying, do not be an angry people. Do not hurl insults at others or stand idly by while others do the same thing in your name and on your behalf. We have heard it said, you shall not commit adultery. But Jesus is saying to us, do not objectify your sisters and brothers. Do not treat them as objects for your benefit. And do not make excuses when others do it either. We have heard it said, do not seek divorce. But Jesus is saying, work for healing in all of your relationships, personal, social, political, economic, and do not let your human nature, your inclinations towards self-preservation lead you to divorce yourselves from one another. Because God has created you for relationship, for unity. Do not live your lives with the hope that you might outlive your enemies, like sweet old Mrs. Horowitz. But live your lives seeking to make things right with them, seeking to love them, seeking to forgive them, and seeking to ask forgiveness when you need to ask for forgiveness. And perhaps maybe climbing out of that mesh might begin right now. Go. Go and be reconciled to your sisters and brothers, each and everyone, near and far, known and unknown. All of them. Each of them. Amen.